coming to you live from the Duck Farm. I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always are too many bills. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 58,632, Are Badger Bites Venomous? An informational pamphlet from the Office of the Prime Minister.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johanna Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And we're back, again, at long last, after another hiatus. Just, we're hiating all over the place.
We just can't stop hiating. That's really the problem here.
Yeah, it's been good, you know, for us to hiate.
Has it, though?
Yeah, I can't really speak to that.
I have 400 bed sores.
That is disgusting.
They checked. I'm 80% bed sore by volume at this point.
Gross. And horrible.
Yeah.
And illegal in 9 states.
Which states is it legal in?
The other 41.
Is it legal in Connecticut?
Yes.
Is it legal in Maryland?
No.
South Dakota?
Yes.
California?
Yes.
California?
No.
What? Double California. Oh, no, but we took a little break-ski there for a variety of reasons. Johannes got a job waxing ostrich butts, so that ate up into our time.
I keep trying to do the waxing, you know, and
it just takes a while.
It takes a while.
Yeah, it's hard to do. That's really it. That's really the big thing. We're working on another project, another internet radio project. Stay tuned for that. So the other thing that we've got going on is that we are swapping up the format of the Mustard Laser podcast a little bit here.
To make room for that other project and the ostrich butt waxing.
Right. So we are going to shorten the podcast. We're doing 1 half-hour segment per episode instead of 2 half-hour segments now, and there will only be one sponsor. It cuts down production costs as well. We were able to lay off our intern, Hortonzo.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been standing outside of the studio window in the rain for like 11 days, and that's weird because it's only been raining the last couple.
Except, right, it's like he's like Eeyore.
Yeah, it's just always
he's got the cloud that follows him around.
Right overhead. So that's,
we tried to call some meteorologists to study this, and they didn't seem interested. It seems to me to be, you know, like he could go places and water crops in like arid nations. You know, he could go to California and fix the water crisis, which is no longer a thing, apparently. But they just don't seem to care.
We also called some meatologists, and they were interested, but their rates were far too high.
Yeah. They seemed real salty, too, about the meteorologists. Mm-hmm.
They didn't get along.
Yeah.
So we suspect there may have been pickup basketball involved.
It seems likely. Yeah.
Somebody dunked on somebody else and got a little bit too showboaty, and now they're not friends anymore. So, you know, it's like, you know, guys, I get it. Like, it's frustrating when somebody gets like that, but you're grown-ups. You gotta be able to move past that. Friendship is too important to sacrifice on that kind of thing.
Also, it is magic.
Friendship or basketball?
Yeah, both.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought basketball had to be magic, because how else could NBA great and round mound of rebound Charles Barkley get all of that mass into the air?
Right. It's magic.
Right. Sorcery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we got a segment for you tonight that we're going to do, and then we're going to be working on our other projects, and we will hopefully have those for you soon. And they'll be exciting and wonderful, and you will forget that we ever ruined your days and made you weep by going on sudden violent hiatuses.
There will also be a couple more episodes coming out that are already recorded, and we're just going to release slightly out of order, that are still in the old format. So we're not just lying to you. As fun as that sounds, the format will change.
Right. It's going to swap up. So look forward to that, and let's go around to the segment for tonight, huh?
All right.
You want to do that?
Yes.
So tonight's segment is
Wrong About Books.
So Wrong About Books is a segment that we do from time to time where we talk about a book because this is a board game podcast, and that makes a lot of sense.
It makes perfect sense.
So we start out, we give you a spoiler-free thumbs up, thumbs down description of the book. So we give a short description of the book and say, if that description makes sense to you, if that sounds like something your jam, should you read it? Will the book make you happy?
It's pretty much the only segment we do that requires any kind of planning beforehand.
Right, right. Which is amazing, I guess.
Because at least so far, we have only reviewed books that we have read.
So far.
We could just make this the book review segment, and we could make Wrong About Books a segment where we're really probably wrong about books because we're reviewing ones that we haven't read just based on what we can figure out from, like,
the
book jacket and the title.
That can we next week.
All right.
Okay. So then after that, we'll do a spoilery review, and we'll talk about the book in detail, and you can stay for that if you want spoilers. That's it. That's Wrong About Books. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, so the book, is that, can we,
yeah,
do we
I,
go
I think
now?
We should talk about the book now.
The book is called All the Little Children. It's by Joe, I'm going to say, is it Joe?
It's Joe.
Furniss, F-U-R-N-I-S-S. It's not Furniss, like, because that's a different word.
I would pronounce it Furniss.
I tried to say it that way when I tried to get the Echo to read it to me, and Alexa couldn't figure it out. And then when I just made it happen a different way, it pronounced it in a way that I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense and doesn't sound at all like furnace.
Huh.
And I think it was just putting the emphasis on the second syllable.
Furnace?
Yeah.
Okay, that works. We'll go with it.
Apparently, she's a former newscaster and journalist from the most united of kingdoms.
Are they, though?
They're the only one with that name, and that's all we have to go on.
Fair enough. So, All the Little Children is a post-apocalyptic story. Is that a fair description?
Yeah.
So, this is the spoiler-free review. I don't think that's a spoiler. Where you're gonna give
it said it in the blurb.
Yeah,
so
give a brief overview of the premise of the book and loosely the plot, and tell you if that sounds like your jam. If this book will tickle your fancy, will make you feel alive.
I don't know if our readers, it might just be my brain problems, but your description that you've done that twice just on this episode now makes zero sense to me, to the point that the first time we did this,
sure,
you were like, if what we've said sounds good to you, is it, you, will you like it? That's what we're telling you. And I'm like, but they already said that sounds good to them.
Well, but
I know now. But I'm just trying to say maybe we can find a better way to phrase it.
So we're going to give a short description of the book. And then advise you on whether or not that book delivers on that description, that premise. If that premise sounds good, does the book actually execute it?
I think premise is the important word here.
Or does the book promise one thing and suggest
and
it will be
deliver
a thing? And then, but it says it's going to be a post-apocalyptic story, but it's actually a story about dogs in space. And there's no apocalypse.
There hasn't been an apocalypse, importantly.
It's just the dogs are in space. They're doing. They're not even doing weird space dog stuff. They're just doing regular dog stuff in space. That's a very different book. And if you
might also be great.
Sure. But if you go in expecting post-apocalyptic action and you get just, you know, dogs just
in space,
just rooting around in the void, that's different. That's not, it's not giving you what you wanted.
Quick aside here.
Sure.
I mentioned to Tom, my Kindle, I have a Kindle that has the, what do they call it? The Kindle with special offers. You get $20 off and they advertise to you on the home screen when your thing's not on. It has started advertising to me mostly like garbage, like Harlequin romance novel type things. But one that keeps coming up also looks like garbage, but at least it kind of sort of matches close to some of the stuff I read in that it's sci-fi. It's just called Dog Aliens. And it is apparently about... What if dogs were aliens? Or like some of the dogs were aliens? They're still just dogs, but also they're aliens.
That's fantastic.
The description I read of it just sounded like a third grader must have created this premise and named the book.
Also, quick aside, we forgot to talk about that guy we saw outside the restaurant.
Oh, yes. This is important.
This is important material. So we went out to eat before we recorded tonight, and as we walk out of the restaurant to come back to Johannes' place and record, we see a gal and a guy coming toward us, and the young lady is talking about her gym, I think it was, is what I overheard. But whatever, doesn't
matter.
They
have weights there, and I think the one you could work out there at my work.
And she was just talking a lot about it, like anime. She seemed interested.
She was intent on this topic of conversation.
The poor guy, though, was, I think as Johannes put it, the platonic ideal of not interested at all.
He was about a half step behind her as they walked, and... that seemed reasonable because it was a narrow sidewalk and we were passing in the other direction. But I kind of got the feeling it was because the face he was making, like, you could hear it. And he needed to be sure that he had, like, a second to fix that if she were to turn around at all.
Yeah, yeah. He was not into this conversation. So that guy, if you're out there listening, you know, we feel for you, buddy.
Yeah. Our thoughts and prayers are with you in this darkest of hours.
But we will not be sending any food aid or medicine.
Well, he was going into a restaurant. Like,
he's probably fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, all the little children.
All of them.
This is the best possible podcast. There, nothing about this is ridiculous at all. So All the Little Children is a post-apocalyptic story set in the UK. That is the UK. It follows a mother named, what is her first name again?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you. But I also don't know the answer. Green. Actually, I don't feel like I knew her name until about halfway into the book.
Yeah, we did because it's first person.
It's
from her perspective. She's got her kids and her sister-in-law and her sister-in-law's kid and one of her kids' friends on a camping trip for the weekend in the woods.
Yeah.
And she's got a cruddy marriage and she's in the woods camping and she's like a businesswoman, she's a business, strong, independent businesswoman trying to have it all in a man's world kind of thing. And then the apocalypse happens and she's got to survive with these children that are running around. All of the little ones, that is.
Actually, hold up a sec. I wouldn't say that. All we know is the apocalypse happens. If we're not going to spoil things that were actually interesting.
Okay.
We'll bleep that or something.
Yeah, just bleep
it. The apocalypse happens.
The apocalypse happens and she's got to survive with all the little children. Just feel free to cow out half of the shit that I just said.
With moos.
Yeah, and so the
Marlene, I believe, is the name of
Marlene,
the character.
Yes. And so the story follows their attempts to survive in this post-apocalyptic setting, having started out camping in the woods, basically. Is that how that goes? Is that a fair summary?
Yes. Sorry. So I looked up the character's name on my Kindle, and I turned off the Kindle, and now here is what is it? Maybe it's because it's listening to us through the Echo, and it heard us talk about dogs. But it's a children's book called Pup Trick, like Patrick, but who is a pup, tells a lie and learns to bark.
Oh.
This is a book with two authors.
Are you sure one isn't the illustrator?
It just says by these two, and I would rather assume that it took two people to write this book.
That is a better assumption.
So anyway, that is the basis of it. It is post-apocalyptic from the view of a mother and also another mother who's not the main character.
Right.
Taking care of these children in the woods of England.
Shropshire, actually.
Yeah.
Which is the impetus for A.E. Houseman's collection of poems, A Shropshire Lad. Shropshire, not the apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Very different things. So, based on that premise, if that makes you think, yeah, I want to read that book, Giannis, does it deliver? Do you think?
Yes.
I agree. I think if that sounded like your jam, you should read this book. It's pretty, you'll have fun. You'll enjoy it.
It was gripping. I didn't want to put it down. I kept going back to it. It was good.
Yeah, and it scratched my apocalypse itch. Now, the second question we asked that I forgot about before, though, is should your mom read it?
Yeah, we missed that on the last one. No, absolutely not.
Your mom wouldn't like this one?
No, she should not read this book.
Okay, Mrs. Stauffer, don't read this one.
No.
Not your thing.
And so now?
We're going to have a little bit of silence, and then we're going to talk about the book.
That's probably long enough. We should mention that talk about the book in this, in case you waded through the silence going, why are they being silent before they talk about the books more? This is the spoilers part. So if you intend to read this book and don't want it ruined before you do that.
Yes.
Turn it off.
Turn it off now.
And I will put time codes, though if you're listening, you already know this.
Right.
But I'll put a time code for when this begins and ends in the show notes.
Show notes.
All right. So spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yes, you do the lisp thing when we say the word spoilers.
That's what we do, yeah. You know, we really got a good rapport going on the show, you know? I do something stupid, you're mean to me, it works really good.
I'm sick of you.
You know, you wish that your life had gone differently so you weren't here doing this right now.
And we drink gin.
I continue to torment you as though I am some sort of, you know, imp out of Hades in order to plague you.
Can other people see you?
I think so. You know, I don't actually have any proof of that.
Terrifying. So this book.
Yeah.
Was so I found it again as a what do they call it? Kindle
First?
Kindle First.
Yeah.
Prime members, I think, only are given access to a number of books about them, roughly the month before their release. Mm-hmm. That was how we found Light of the Fireflies.
Yeah, that was a good book.
I've read a couple other though others that way, though, but I don't think we've reviewed any others.
Mm-hmm.
And the blurb that I read on Kindle First made this book sound a little more like... Well, so first of all, it was like... It gave me the impression that, like, she was collecting, like, all of the kids that she found that were out, you know, Boy Scouts that were out mm-hmm. on a trip in the woods and blah, blah, blah. And that didn't happen really at all. Like, right. She finally found some other kids in the woods much, much later in the book.
Yeah.
But it also, this might have just been my own hang-ups or whatever you want to call them, but it gave me the impression that it was going to be a little bit more like... empowered women showing that they don't need no man with mm-hmm. their children in the woods. And it was not that. So no, not to say that it was the antithesis of that, but that wasn't the focus.
Right. It was, these are female characters who are in the woods during an apocalypse.
Doing what?
Doing their thing. Yeah.
People in the woods during an apocalypse who are the characters right. that we've set them up to be might do.
Yeah. It felt very natural, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
It didn't, if the author had an axe to grind socially, it didn't
come through. It didn't come through in a way that was like, I see the axe to grind in what she's doing.
Right. It came through
organically.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, and it was a very, very enjoyable story. So
yeah.
Good on you there. Author Joe Furness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really very much enjoyed the story. I didn't read the blurb at all before. Mm-hmm. Johannes had recommended it, and I was late in getting around to it finally, so I just dove in and hoped for the best. I actually had forgotten the plot summary by the time I started and thought it was a different book you had recommended.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was really confused. Like, I'm looking for them to go to Italy and stuff the whole way through.
Huh.
And I'm like, when is that going to happen? There's not much. Oh, I'm wrong about which thing that he recommended this is.
Wrong about books.
But that was neither here nor there, but It maintains a really tight focus on the lead character, which is cool. It doesn't do anything weird or experimental or particularly ambitious with the structure, but there's a lot of great character work that goes on with staying that close to this one person.
Yeah.
And I was consistently impressed with the consistency of the character, the way the author works and has her function. And I mean, it's all first person narrative. And it's kind of neat to watch. It's like, you can watch the character justify doing something that you know is probably not a good idea and be like, you shouldn't do that, but I see your thought processes for why you're leaving the camp for the 300th time or whatever the case may be. And then you can see her kind of later on realize that she'd made that mistake and kind of try to reconcile it and whatnot, and it works. It's very nicely done first person narration.
Did you read the little thing by the author at the end, the thank yous?
Yeah.
It made it I guess, highlighted what I understood on a sort of subconscious level was mm-hmm. happening, but wouldn't have probably put into words, that she's basically trying to describe what, like, a mother, like, mama bear style mother would do.
Mm-hmm.
What I think her approach to
sure.
motherhood is, how they would react in this
mm-hmm.
situation. And since the main character is very much like a sort of powerful businesswoman, like mm-hmm. she's the breadwinner of the family, she's really like gone after what she wanted and made a lot of things happen and made the money and built the life that she wants
mm-hmm.
while still also having to mother her kids, and has a deadbeat husband basically, but not in a way that was like, because all husbands are shit. It was just like, yeah, this is a character that I understand.
Yeah.
And I see what's happening, and I see that she's struggling with it. Like, none of it was just obnoxious. Like, we already went over it. It's not mm-hmm. like telegraphed social issues or whatever
right.
hang-ups of the author. It was very well put together, so
yeah.
that the characters stood on their own and did what they needed to do. But yeah, it was that. Like, so I never really felt like I had a handle until the very end of the book on what this lady who was narrating was gonna do. She would do things and I'd be like, oh my god, you crazy person. Why? Why are you leaving them? Like, clearly They're going to get eaten by radioactive wolves or something. I don't know what's going on in this book. And it did a good job, too, of like, I was going, it's moms in the woods with kids and they're learning about themselves. And the fact that it's an apocalypse is never really going to come into play. Everyone is going to be safe. Nobody is safe.
Nobody is safe. And so apocalypse fiction runs this weird gamut between like, Disneyland apocalypse, where it's like, oh no, the world ended, but we're just gonna have a great time in the end times, and it's gonna be fine because we can rebuild and we're people.
Fallout is even kind of like that.
Yeah,
the Fallout universe is like, you're so far after the apocalypse, you're not seeing the stuff that happened. You're just seeing like the wacky civilizations that have sprung up in the wasteland.
And
after.
Then you swing to the other end of it, which Johannes doesn't care for, but I enjoy where you get like the road where you're like, we're going to drag you through this garbage apocalypse.
Well,
and
I like that too. I just think that Cormac McCarthy is a garbage person, but we can go into that again at
another day. Yeah. But you see the two extremes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And this does a nice job, I think, of what was kind of neat. It almost slaloms between the two kind of effectively.
It kinda does.
You sometimes have these scenes where the mother or Marlene is working with her kids and, you know, niece and her sister-in-law and whatnot, and trying to make their temporary abode in the end times work, or not the end times, but it's not actually a global apocalypse, whatever. And then like these really horrific scenes where things are going wrong and things are bad and people are murdering them. And what was interesting to me about that is that when you've got the scenes where they're camping, where it's basically a really glorified camping trip that also involves occasionally looting a supermarket, it felt like, it made sense because it's a parent trying to keep their kids from understanding the sheer scope of how wrong everything has gone.
Right.
But then that other part intrudes on it, and the parent has to deal with that, too. So it was a really nice balancing act between. I was very impressed with how the author juggled those things.
Yeah. I guess we can say now, the apocalypse that happens is terrorists, but homegrown terrorists. Yeah. So like a group of British dissidents, basically. It's not tied to any outside group. Basically recreates the plague. It doesn't say which one. It wouldn't be the bubonic plague, but...
It's some sort of super plague.
But it's basically, I think it is even said that it is the plague that we know as the plague, but then it's genetically engineered in some way so that it's extremely fast and basically everyone in the cities dies and they only happen to survive because they were out in the woods and there's something about it. It either feeds on or attaches to carbon monoxide, so the cities were hit the worst, but it died off fairly quickly, which is why they were able to survive later.
Yeah.
And then you sort of hear hints over shortwave radio or from people that they occasionally come across that the rest of the world is aware of it, but mostly unaffected, like parts of Europe are affected, but was mostly contained to the British Isles, and... the world is sort of in this political battle of like, we don't want their problem. We're not going to send them aid because we don't want our people to die of their plague and then or bring it back by accident.
Right.
And that's like the kind, caring side of the thing. And that the rest of the world is like, the UN is still debating about this, but some countries are like, we just need to wipe this thing out before it becomes a bigger problem. And so they're like secretly sending in mercenaries to just kill everyone who has survived so they don't become carriers and transmit this plague back into the rest of the world.
Right.
So it goes from like camping trip in the woods to like running from masked men in helicopters with automatic weapons who are here just to kill us.
And that's another place where I was talking about before, it hits a nice middle ground between this is a story you can enjoy and this is a story that is super realistic about how awful all of this would be.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene where one of the kids is killed in an explosion.
Yeah.
And there's scenes where the masked men with guns are, you know, murdering people, just gunning them right down. And those scenes don't really pull their punches.
Right.
But they are presented with enough deftness on the author's part, I guess, that you don't feel sickened by them, I guess.
Right.
You're horrified without being like, I'm looking at something grotesque for grotesqueness sake.
Yeah, it does two things very well. One is that it didn't even occur to me until you said it that this was book was written in the first person. And often a book written in the first person stands out awfully as a book written in the first person. It can cause a lot of problems.
Yeah.
It's kind of an awkward way to write a lot of the time. It virtually guarantees that the narrator survives, which breaks a lot of the suspense. And there are books that have had a first-person narrator that dies, and it's I've never seen it done well. It's just like, oh, that was stupid. So it does that very well, to the point that I didn't even really notice that it was first-person.
Sure.
It just read well. The other thing is that the main character, the narrator, Marlene, is in shock. Like, just kind of going through the motions, doing what she knows how to do, trying to keep her kids alive in this wacky new post-apocalypse that they live in. And so the reader is in shock. And whether you recognize it or not, that is in part, and I think intentionally, why horrible things happening in front of the narrator don't translate.
Like
Tom said, the punches aren't, no punches are pulled. It's brutal, but presented elegantly in a way that you're just like, and now this is happening in front of me. That is awful, and I will file that away to deal with emotionally later, because that's not what I have time to do right now.
Right. What's nice about the first person narration too, if I can piggyback on you a minute, is, you know, so much first person narrative immediately suggests the unreliable narrator. Like, what is this person not telling me? What are they delusional about? How are they lying to me?
Right.
I never had that impression with Marlene. Like, she missed stuff, and occasionally she went back and was like, that was really dumb, the thing that I did.
Yeah.
But I never had the sense that she wasn't making a good faith effort to relate to me the events as she knew them and had experienced them, which was, I don't know if refreshing is too strong of a word, but I liked it.
Well, it's also what mattered. That's what the story was. The story wasn't what happened to all these people in the woods. It was Marlene's experience of what happened to all these people in the woods.
Right, right.
And so that it didn't matter if there was an unreliable narrator, because that wasn't the point of the story. It wasn't communicating a string of events. It was communicating Marlene's experience of a string of events.
Right, right. The large scale picture didn't matter as much as the small scale picture. Yeah. What else did I really like about this book? It surprised me, but I liked both of the teenage characters.
Yeah, me too.
Lola, Marlene's niece, and a kid named Jack, who is a older boy from a boarding school who survives because he and his boarding school, they were on a camping trip, I think?
They were doing an orienteering, learning how to use compasses and read maps.
So he's in his teens somewhere, I think.
Yeah.
And he was out with some younger boys doing an orienteering course and survived because they were in the woods doing that at the time. And he kind of took over him, and it's like a Lost Boys type scenario.
Yeah.
And so they meet up and whatnot. And normally teenage characters are annoying because authors feel the need to present them as the most annoying kind of teenagers.
Right. Just overplay every stereotype of teenagers.
Reference the bit in Harry Potter where they become teenage.
Right.
They hit their, 14 or 15, and they're like, oh, now.
And it's unreadable for a book and a half.
Yeah. And I get it. Realism matters and verisimilitude, and teenagers are often like that. I was one at one point or another. I remember. But at the same time, also, it was really nice to see these characters who were very immature, and they did all of the things teenagers do, but weren't presented with contempt, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of, and weren't completely, like, they had moments where they
were people.
Were people, and the good part, their good characteristics they were building as they grew up came through, and even when they were doing things that were dumb and you're like really frustrated with them, you could see the reasoning behind it and empathize a bit.
Yeah.
Lola more than Jack, because Jack was very peripheral to the story.
But like, even at the end, so since this is the spoilers, we might as well just go all out. Like, Lola leaves and they're all freaking out about where she is. And she met Jack out wherever she was wandering, and like, then she was only going to go away for a while, but then he was like, he needed help with all these young boys, and I was there, and so I stayed a couple days. And so you'd been seeing the whole thing from the viewpoint of the two mothers, like, freaking out, where is our daughter/niece? And when she came back, she was just like, oh, I didn't even realize how much that would freak you out. I just got caught up in doing things. And you were like, yeah, okay, I kind of get that. I don't hate you. That's a stupid, thoughtless, teenagery thing to do, but it wasn't like, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. And even when she stays behind at the very end of the book, and like the big twist that's like, oh, I guess some people got off the island, but mm-hmm. not everyone, because some of you are staying behind with your insane niece.
Right.
You weren't mad at her, and the narrator wasn't mad at her. She was like, yeah, okay, I get it. At this point, in this world we live in, this is what happens now.
Right. It was a good ending, too.
Yeah, like, it was.
It wasn't... It again, the thing I keep coming back to this book is it threads the needle nicely between Disneyland apocalypse and apocalypse.
It wasn't too like Deus Ex Machina, yeah. And everything is fine because...
The Norwegians showed up with a hospital ship.
Yeah.
Which is what happens. But
it was like, some of you are fine and some of you can't be because Norway might not send another ship.
Right,
and this
right.
one is leaving.
And so since you're staying here to help your niece, that's brave
that
of you.
That might be it. Also.
But you also might not get off... out of England.
The end. Yeah.
So good. Very nicely done. What else? There was another piece that I wanted to get to a moment ago that I forgot.
Welcome to my world.
Except you come by it naturally. I have to drink a bunch of gin to get here.
Yeah. We were talking about the teenagers and how they're not awful. We were talking about first person.
You mentioned the husbands. Mm-hmm. Or the husband earlier who dies. He's never... alive in the story.
Right.
We never encounter him, but he's not a character. I mean, he's a butt guy. Nobody likes that guy.
Yeah.
But he's also not a grotesque character, and they go into a little bit of how he wound up that way, which is kind of nice. It feels very natural and very realistic how that happened.
Yeah.
It's quick. It's brief. He doesn't get much space, but he wouldn't because, you know, he's dead.
Yeah.
Then the story's right. But also there's this nice little bit where he's trying to get a hold of her as the apocalypse starts, and she's got messages from him on her phone. So like, okay, so he's not complete trash.
Right.
Even though he's a pretty lousy dude.
Yeah.
Just lots of little character moments that make the characters feel more real and more complete and whatnot. The small children are pretty nicely drawn too.
Like, yeah, she did an interesting thing where I think she probably at some point mentions the ages of most of her own children.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of her own children.
Yeah.
But, like, the Lost Boy group that they end up mm-hmm. with, you might hear an age of one of them here or there, but mostly you just have to work it out from their behavior, which
yeah.
worked really well. Because, for the most part, you don't need to know that they're 7 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to know this is how this kid is behaving, and it's a group of kids of varying ages. And so put whatever... on that works for your brain
mm-hmm.
and you've got it. That was right. That was the right thing to do.
You have enough to yeah. go from. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very nicely done that way. I enjoyed too. I felt like we got a very nice picture of Marlene's background
mm-hmm.
without needing to go into too much detail. So we get a few snippets here and there where it's clear she grew up as an expat traveling around a lot.
Yeah.
With her parents in Africa, particularly.
There were a lot of like weird sort of flashbacky, not really flashbacks, but like, you know, she'd be waking up from a dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept expecting it to matter more, and it never did. And it didn't bother me. I was just like, oh, it's just setting up character. But it
yeah.
felt very like this will be important at some point. And it wasn't.
It was
any more than that. It developed the character
right,
further.
And it told us a little about why she might act the way she does.
Yeah.
Those were nice. There was enough of it that I felt pretty good about it, but not so much that I was overwhelmed. Yeah, a lot of this book I felt like was just running a very nice pattern between extremes. Like
yeah.
it could have waffled one way or the other, and it just really hits its mark very well all the way through.
It also had a lot of good kind of dry British snark in it. Not
yeah,
a ton,
yeah.
but enough, like there was some levity in a way that was kind of like... digs at people who you would have wanted digs at, like mm-hmm. the lousy husband or a former coworker or whatever it was.
The scene where she's going through her house after they go back to her where she lived, and she's going around and finding things to take with them that will
yeah.
help them, and just in her mind cussing out her husband for leaving stuff around or
yeah.
for not doing something she'd asked him to, or for having died in a certain place, so she can't go into there.
Can't go into the kitchen to get the food because
it's full of plague carrying flies, you
yeah.
know. And it's just it's a wonderfully done little bit of character development, and it's the kind of thing where you're like, that's kind of grotesque, but also how people function in those situations, you know.
Yeah,
when things are really awful, there's a certain subset of the population that is just like, I'm going to make the worst joke that I can. The most
yeah.
gallows humor thing. And I think most of that population lives in the British Isles.
A lot of them, for sure.
It's kind of their thing.
Yeah.
It was great. I really enjoyed that part.
So we're pretty well, not pretty far. We're 35-ish okay. minutes, so we should wrap it up.
Yeah.
If you don't have anything else to
add. No, this is a really, really very well done book. I highly recommend it to anybody who has enjoyed this review, I guess.
Yeah, you've actually, so far, we've spoiled a few things, but you would probably still enjoy the book.
Yeah,
even
yeah,
if
no,
having listened to this, you decide to go back and read it.
The author, or Joe Furness has, she's a very good writer. You know, sentence by sentence, word by word, it's all very competently, professionally mm-hmm. done. Very impressed with the mastery of the language and the craft on display here. It's not too long, I don't think.
Mm-mm. And it read very fast,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it'll keep your attention, chapters. So... Joe Furness. I'm going to pronounce your name wrong every time here, apparently. Very well done. Good stuff. We really enjoyed your book.
So it's not all positive. So we're not just buttering her bread the whole time. There were a couple points where it was like ridiculous over the top action. Like the exploding pickup truck thing was pretty ridiculous.
Okay, yeah.
And some of the interactions with the plague bodies or flies or whatever were kind of like understandable from the character standpoint. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to go near it. And then but I feel like if you really wanted to nitpick, it was probably not super scientifically thought through as far as disease carrying and all that goes, but it didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one who tends to look for things to nitpick. So I recognized that it was there, but it didn't wreck the book for me or anything.
The only thing I saw that kind of stood out to me, and this might only be because it happened so early in the book, is that there's a scene early on where they go to a farm and the cows are all freaking out because they haven't been milked in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And their udders are swollen. They're, you know, they need to be milked badly because they're cows. And I expected them to go back at some point to the farm and milk the cows to find the cows dead. The farm needed to happen again for me. It was like, it was Chekhov's swollen udder at this point.
Well, they went back to a farm.
Yeah, you flop a big, swollen, engorged cow udder on the table in front of me in Act 1. That something better happen with that cow udder by the end of Act 3, I'm just saying. And nothing did, so... But it didn't really bother me all that much.
I guess I could see that. They did go to another dairy farm.
That's fair. Yeah, it's true. There's some intense scenes in there. Don't get me wrong. So if you're not into the intensity of post-apocalyptic fiction, you know, but it's good. It's really quite lovely.
Yep. So two thumbs up from me.
Yep. Two thumbs up from me too. Highly recommend.
And you can find it on Kindle or probably in whatever bookstore you might go to. Actually, I don't know if that's true. This might be one of those Kindle Select or whatever.
Let's go to. Let me just go to Amazon.com and. All the Little Children. Nope, there's paper. It's paperback.
Nice.
So you can probably buy it, and you could buy a real copy if you want.
A real, not a pretend one.
Not a pretend one, yeah, which has the secret bonus ending. There's no secret bonus ending. That was a lie that I told you.
It's pretend. All right. So you can find that wherever fine books are sold, probably. And you can find us... How do we start? Oh, you can contact us if you want on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You
it's
can
been
do
a while, you guys.
It has been, yeah. You can do it by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can do it in the comments section on our website at www.mildlyalarming.com. You can rate and review us on iTunes and on Google Play. I think you can also find us to listen to on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio.
Or you can rescue a child from disaster, and that child will grant you a single wish, which you can then use to tell us about whatever you have to say. But you might also use it to get candy. Up to you. Your call, man.
I'd probably go with the candy.
You think the candy is the way to go?
Yeah. I mean...
Because then you could share the candy with the child.
Yeah.
The child will like that. Maybe they'll give you another wish.
Yeah, would be great. And then you could use that wish to contact us and share your unlimited candy with us.
Right, because why did you wish for anything but unlimited candy?
Yeah, that's just silliness.
That was foolishness. You shouldn't have done that.
So we'll be back, hopefully, with unlimited candy next week, hopefully.
Hopefully no more hiatus.
Yeah. See you then.
All right,
or
bye.
Here, you'll hear... I don't know. Bye.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Guy Manson's Fartzorbent Office Chairs.
Do your coworkers stop by your cube to complain because you fart like a Clydesdale? Do they leave brochures for colonoscopies on your desk? Do they call you Possum Boy and refuse to explain why? Hi, I'm Guy Manson, or Possum Boy to my friends, with my revolutionary new Fartzorbent office chair. Thanks to advanced stink crystals embedded in the foam padding, my chairs absorb 99.9% of all farts directed into them, safely trapping the smelly butt gas inside the chair. And don't worry about the excess. Fartzorbent office chairs redirect the remaining 0.1% back into the anus. Now you'll never have to explain to the guy in the next cube that no, a portal to Satan's garbage dump didn't open at your desk. It's just burrito day. Order today and get a can of Fart Be Gone spray for when you make a toot while standing up. Give us a call at 1-800-FART-BUTT.
Warning. Piercing the outer mesh of a Fartzorbent office chair ruins all the stored farts at once, potentially killing you and everyone in a 3-mile radius. Fart chairs may smell slightly of eggs. Do not spin around in a fart chair you are not 8 years old. Fartzorbent and the Brown Cloud logo are registered trademarks of Fartzorbent LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of Gunchlin & Gunchlin Incorporated. Void where prohibited.